Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you two, Not in a Creepy Way.
Hey. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
And tonight, we're going to talk about our first Tyler Perry movie. So we're launching into the Tyler Perry cinematic universe with the 2020 film, A Fall from Grace. Now, before we get into that movie, so we missed our first week ever last week. I didn't even bother to put up like a rerun because I figured the whole catalog is available online. So if anybody hankers for a rerun, you can certainly re-listen to stuff. But we had a tragic event of unknown consequence that happened on Saturday, the 26th? I don't know. Anyway, on Saturday. The day after Drew and I recorded Rogue One, where we talk about how Dad lost his Apple Watch. And yeah, if nothing else, it'll be a nice distraction, you know, keep his mind off other things, you know. And then Drew's last comment was, what was he going to do with that weekend anyway?
So Saturday the 26th, then we should say that today is Friday, July 2nd.
Yes. Okay.
Because it won't be released on July 2nd. So we just, Everybody can kind of mark the calendar with the dates accordingly.
June 26th, 2021, a Saturday, which was 7 days after we threw them their 50th anniversary party. Six days after their 50th anniversary. My mom and dad are at their cabin, which is, you know, fairly remote. And at least from a hospital. And my mom, about 1 in the afternoon, collapsed into cardiac arrest and nearly died. The fact that my dad was right there when it happened, and he had an AED, and he called 911, who guided him through a bunch of stuff, and the volunteer fire department got there, and then the regular ambulance got there, and then the helicopter air ambulance got there, and transported her to our local hospital. And she was released from the hospital yesterday, having spent, 5 days in the hospital? 6 days?
6 days.
And for a while, it was pretty stressful and scary. And since then, actually, there's a bigger story to tell, and we will tell that in due time. But just for now, and if you're either a member of the Facebook page or a Facebook friend of mine, I posted a little PSA to maybe... think about investing in an AED, automatic external defibrillator, something like that.
Correct.
To have around your home, if it's available in your part of the world, it's not a bad idea. And it turns out there's no substitute. So, yeah. Anyway, so.
And not without grandiosity, but without that, our mother would likely not be alive today.
Yes. Oh, no, definitely. No. If it wasn't for the defibrillator and my dad's quick action, both. Calling 911 right away, doing chest compressions, working through the AED with the help of the 911 operator, and then of course all the other like EMS personnel and doctors and whatnot. She came pretty close to us no longer having a mom. So Father Anderson and Mother Anderson are doing great. She still hates me referring to her as Mother Anderson. So I hope she was alive to hate me for that for a very long time in the future. But like I said, there'll be a longer story to tell sooner than later.
And they're expecting her to fully recover, if not surpass. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, she had a nice little Roto-Rooter thing going through her. So, she should be better than ever. She's got a little bit of recovery, as you can imagine. But all the scary stuff we were worried about, like the amount of times her brain was without oxygen, was very troubling for the first 24 hours or so. But yeah, all signs point to great stuff. So we are very happy with the modern medicine we have. Now, on to Tyler Perry movies.
Yeah. Now the very, very clumsy transition.
Well, okay. Okay, everyone's a critic, man. I'm trying to do the best transition I can.
No, you did good. I'm just saying.
Yeah, no, it's okay.
There is no good segue, so you did the best that you could.
If there was a graceful way, I fell from that grace.
Graceful. Nice. Yeah,
well, I tried. That's all I had. So, Brother Jay, this is your pick, although we've kind of, when it's your week to pick, you often give us a list, which yes. I find fun. And you gave me a big, long list, and it was funny because a lot of them to me seem like kind of downers or whatever. And then there were two that caught my eye. Well, actually, there are three. There's The Tomorrow War, which I was interested in, but it wasn't available, I think, till today, right? On Netflix or something.
I don't know.
But because that actually has one of the cast is Mike Mitchell from the Doughboys podcast. So he's fun to listen to.
Good to know. So you're right. I went through Amazon Prime Video and I went through Netflix and I picked, I think, five movies from each and kind of said, these are some movies that I might be interested in watching. They're movies that I'm eventually going to watch all of them in some fashion, but this gives you the ability to, like, you can be included on the ride.
I like when you give me a list and I saw the Tyler Perry movie and I thought, yes.
I don't think I realized it was... No, in fact, I know I didn't realize it was a Tyler Perry movie.
Was there any particular names on the cast list or something that drew your eye to it, or just the thought? Or
The preview is what got me. So I usually would... So I'll go to Netflix, sorry, but as no one will be surprised that I am anal retentive, I have a process that I pretty much adhere to. That process being I'll go... to a movie that I think I might want to watch. I'll do a little bit of research about it. I'll kind of read a very brief plot synopsis, and then if there's a preview, I'll watch the preview. If all of those seem at least semi-attractive to me on a factor greater than 5 out of 10, then I'm going to put it on my list. If it's a 5 or less, then I think about it, and it kind of goes in this reserve list that, like, if I never have anything to do and, like, I don't know, I don't know. If I have nothing else to do, then it might be a last resort. Although usually these days I just sleep. So
increasingly so in my case.
Yeah. So, you know, my system is just that I kind of, as a way to keep finding movies to watch, because otherwise what happens if I don't have a list, whenever I want to go and watch something, it takes me just as long to find something to watch as I would spend watching something. And then it's just by the time I get frustrated and give up and sleep. There's a theme here.
Yeah. It's funny. I have, I think, a similar process with audiobooks. I have found that I like shopping for audiobooks more than I like listening to audiobooks a lot of the time. So I've just discovered that since it takes me so long to find a book that I'm willing to either pay for outright or to use a credit for, it's kind of a long process. So I've discovered since I like that process, I'll just enjoy the process. So I've spent hours looking at audible.com, at audiobooks, getting into weird holes, and not actually pulling trigger and buying anything, which makes me happy.
Speaking of audiobooks and Audible, yes. We just go right off the rails.
Yeah, why not?
Early. I don't know if you saw on Netflix that the story of what is it, Marion Cotillard, I think is her name, of West Cork fame or infamy, the murder in West Cork that became a podcast.
Okay, hold on. No, that's not her name. That's an actress's name. You're thinking of Sophie Duplantier or something.
Yes. Yeah, okay, that's
Sophie is her name because that's what the Netflix documentary. Yeah.
Yes. So you saw that it came out.
I watched the whole thing in one sitting.
God damn you!
Okay. I'm sorry.
I'm jealous. I haven't had a chance. I haven't had the time to myself to watch it yet. So it's on my list. Good. Is it worth? It's worth watching.
Oh yeah, it's good.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's only three episodes, and they're about an hour apiece. Maybe even less in some cases.
Well, I don't think it needs to be that much longer.
Exactly. And it's all, I mean, you get to hear from everybody. So it's pretty great. I mean, you know, you kind of know how it ends if you've listened to West Cork or know anything about that case. But having a visual of all the people involved and like the...
And the places.
The place. Well, just, yeah, like the terrain and stuff.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. Yeah. No, I loved it. I highly recommend it. It's called Sophie.
Anybody out there who is a fan of the West Cork podcast news documentary, I guess is probably a better term. It's worth it. So
yeah,
I'm looking forward to Sophie. So I'm glad that you met with your approval. That means that I will probably equally enjoy it.
Yeah, I think so. I think you'll enjoy it quite a bit. Yeah. I'm sorry, I beat you to the punch there.
Tyler Perry.
Yeah. So what do you know about Tyler Perry movies? You had not seen this, right?
I've not seen this.
Okay. Have you seen any Tyler Perry
movies? I have to date, barring this one, I had not seen an entire Tyler Perry movie.
Yeah. I've seen movies with Tyler Perry in them.
I've seen a couple movies with Tyler Perry in them, but the Tyler Perry movies themselves, which I think the only ones I'm really aware of are the comedies and the...
Oh, we're going to talk.
They haven't really appealed to me.
They're not for you.
Just because I'm not... I don't doubt that. Yeah. I don't doubt that. But also, I just... The humor that's in them, no matter who makes them, I can't. I don't like the humor. I never have. I can't now. Now, of course, I can't think of his name. No, it's just those. It's those kind of those stupid funny movies that aren't. I don't know. They just the stupid funny that are predictable. They have value. I just don't have time. I would rather watch something that's either really smart funny or just doesn't even give the premise of trying to be funny, i.e. Jackass, you know?
Yeah.
I either want the lowest common denominator or I want kind of the highest tier, but all the stuff in between with a few exceptions, I mean, you know, like Rat Race, things like that. I'm kind of picky about my comedies. So,
okay, so here's what because I hadn't really known anything about Tyler Perry movies. I didn't know much about Tyler Perry himself, the person. I mean, I knew he owns a movie studio in Atlanta that's pretty impressive. I think it was a former maybe like slave plantation or something, or Confederate soldier barracks. Maybe that's what it is. I think it was some sort of military thing. Maybe it wasn't even Confederate soldiers. Maybe it was just like a decommissioned military base. Anyway, that is Tyler Perry Studios. And so
good for him.
And he has a tremendous output. He writes, directs, produces a ton of stuff. Like he has so many things. Like he is doing movies and series. And before, I mean, a lot of his movies came from his plays. And so my understanding of Tyler Perry is that, of course, he is, he's very prolific. He puts out stuff fast. He appeals to an underserved community, like the African American movie watching audience.
He provides representation that is clearly lacking.
Well, and also like it has a Baptist religious sort of undertones, or sometimes overtones, but there's a lot of he brings a lot of that. I mean, there are a lot of it's kind of like I want to say family melodramas, even when the movies aren't necessarily family movies, but they are melodramas. Oh my God.
This could very easily have been a Lifetime Network movie.
Yep. Lifetime. Absolutely.
Hallmark.
And that's the kind of thing is that's the kind of stuff that he produces. And here's a mistake I made. I confused the Madea movies with like Big Mama's House, you know, or like sort of what Eddie Murphy did with the Clumps, you know, where it's
or the Nutty Professor.
Yeah. The Madea movies are not like that, although Madea is kind of a buffoonish figure and the comic relief in a lot of movies. My understanding is a lot of the Madea movies, which is sort of a breakout character, but a lot of the stuff, I mean, a lot of the stuff has like real drama and dark shit happens, but there happens to be this one character that people love. Anyway, and so again, yeah, as middle-aged white guys, maybe this is these movies are not meant to be targeting us. However, again, these are just could be any on any channel at any point. I mean, it's just melodrama is what it is.
Oh, you and I are definitely not the demographic for this movie.
Yeah,
but it in no way diminishes the quality that this movie was.
Oh no, not at all. No, there I have some issues. But
yes,
yeah, but certainly, like I said, I am very impressed with the person Tyler Perry. Because he is certainly making a difference, in the world, which is great. Love it.
Yeah. Well, so, and let me, I'm going to interrupt and preempt. I'm going to just go right for the juggler. So yeah. Is part of the problem, could part of the problem you have with this movie be attributed to the, at, by the fact at which the speed this movie was assembled?
That could be part of it. This movie was shot in 5 days.
Which is... impressive.
Yeah. Also crazy.
Yeah.
A 2-hour movie that, you know, now granted it was this first movie that was in like the, his deal with Netflix. So it was sort of a straight to cable movie. However, I think 26 million people saw it in the first 30 days, maybe less, or wow. Maybe less days. But
some good stuff.
No, it's like, you know, he gets lots of views. He has several series going right now. I think part of the problem, well, we'll kind of get to it. Part of the problem is it's just super sort of formulaic and melodramatic. And I think part of the reason why he can get away with shooting a movie like this in 5 days is he works with all of these actors. Like he has a pretty much a stable of actors that he uses. So I'm sure they have developed some kind of shorthand, you know, with his directing. But the tonal shifts in the characters on screen, it is like I was getting a little bit of whiplash because yeah. All of a sudden the tone will shift just dramatically. But yeah, we'll talk. By the way, did you notice in the opening credits that Adrian Pasdar was one of the first people on the credit sheet?
No.
Like maybe within the first 10 people, Adrian Pasdar? No. I'm like, Adrian Pasdar.
This was an exception for me. This is one of two times in the entire time we have done this podcast. This is one of two movies in the entire history that I've done the podcast that I didn't watch this movie on a TV.
Oh, okay. It was all on
a
portable device?
On my phone on the plane.
Yeah, okay. Cool.
So I can't remember what the other movie was. So, because I was on the plane, and of course, this plane ride was coming to Alaska for a ostensibly not terrific reason, I was probably a little distracted and disjointed and not really paying attention to the credits. I was trying to get lost in the movie and lose myself.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway, Adrian Pasdar, you know,
yeah.
Former Mr. Natalie Maines.
Yeah.
Also.
Formerly of Heroes.
Yep. Also, He's pretty much the voice of every animated Iron Man in the last dozen years.
Also, I didn't recognize him.
No, you know why? Because he's on the screen for like 20 seconds. Like, now, granted, it's weird. It was such a nothing role. I'm like, dude could have been just uncredited. But whatever, it was fine.
Yeah, I know.
So, okay, before we dig into the plot, what did you think of this movie?
I thought the first half of this movie was really great. I thought the third quarter of this movie was okay, and the last quarter of this movie, I just thought, I knew where it was heading by the half point of this movie, and I was a little disappointed at what we were left with.
Yeah, I've got questions. Yeah.
So part of me feels, and I, again, I'm speculating out of my ass. I have no idea, but part of me felt like this is an attempt to have a serialized set of movies.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, again, or this, I don't know if they all, if this is again, like a Tyler Perry cinematic universe. I was kind of like, being silly about that, but it's possible these all exist in the same world.
Well, because it's kind of like that whole, to me, it's like a Patterson novel. It was set up in a way that, you know, there was a villain, there's a seemingly normal system, a villain, and then a hero, in this case, a heroine, and a resolution, but a resolution that did not result in the villain being apprehended, which leads into the next movie and or book. So it to me, again, it's like one of those Patterson novels or a Vince Flynn novel, or, you know, the serialized kinds of things, the pulpy kinds of things. And there's nothing, I like those as good as anything. I have nothing wrong with it. It just, the way that it seemed very ham-handed at the end, where I would have expected, based on my experience in the first half of the movie, I expected more from the last half of the movie, I think.
Yeah, I thought I knew what was going, and then I realized that, oh, there have been problems all along with this story.
The build-up and the anticipation of the story was great. The payoff for that build-up was disproportionately lacking.
Yeah, it was weird. And so I thought the acting was actually pretty good. But again, I think it shifted gears in such a clashy manner that I think maybe that's either like a writing directing problem. Doesn't matter. It's Tyler Perry's problem. He did it all.
Well, and so part of me, because I didn't know at the time that it only took 5 days, part of me now that I'm reexamining it, looking backwards, it makes me think that this became an editing issue, that he may not have had something to edit with.
Maybe.
If he only had 5 days of stuff to work with.
Yeah.
He may not have had enough material to kind of reshoot things, redo things, what have you. It just seems like it's not entirely polished.
Well, true. Yeah. I mean, and there were technical things, like people have gone through this movie. By the way, this movie did not, even though it was well viewed, did not hold up under much criticism. In fact, I think there were memes about, I think like one of them was like, "Ashtray, bitch." and also the fact that you could see like boom mics and stuff in some of the scenes. But again, I don't even care about that. That's not, but I think there are some storytelling issues, but that's okay. Cause like I said, did I enjoy this movie? Actually, here, did you enjoy this movie?
I was entertained by this movie.
Yeah, that's how I felt. It was
enjoyment.
Fine.
Enjoyment is a little generous for what I'm not sorry I watched it. I'll never watch it again.
Oh no, I'll never watch this movie again.
And like a cheap McDonald's hamburger, like I won't remember having eaten it or watched it tomorrow. I mean, I know that I did, and I kind of remember what it tastes like, but it eventually it will just be like, oh, I did that, but meh. Yeah. And again, nothing wrong with that. There's plenty of stuff I've watched that's like that. So I guess it's normal. It's not, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just not remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a Lifetime quality movie. Yeah. Which again, there's, you know, like Lifetime.
Oh no.
God bless the Canadians.
I can't tell you the weird, like crazy, like I watched the Betty Broderick story and, you know, like stupid stuff like that. So I'm not pretending to be above any of that. I'm not, I'm plenty trashy, but yeah, this had I gone to a movie theater and watched this, I would have been upset that I had spent money on it. Having watched it on Netflix and it was just included, I was like, "Nah, that's fine." In the days of COVID and being housebound, I think that probably did the viewership of this service.
Oh, I'm sure it did. Yes.
Which, and this movie is not alone in that distinction, but there's a lot of stuff that came out that was not good that people have watched a ton of. So.
Yeah, again, I mean, I don't want to be...
We don't want to be two white guys bashing this movie.
Well, exactly. I mean, yeah, on one hand, it's like, well, no, yeah. I don't want to be bashing on it because, again, it's not really for me, although it's funny because it's just, it's perfectly... I mean, you know, again, the fact that it's predominantly black characters is not... There's no problem with any of that. It's fun to see, you know, I kind of now pay attention to, it's nice to see people of different shapes and sizes that you don't always see.
Yeah.
In like in Lifetime movies, you're not going to have like the big fat best friend kind of character that isn't explained in that way, you know?
Yeah. Well, also, and the one thing that I think this movie did, and again, I'm not knocking the movie. I'm just saying the one thing this did is this is a movie I've seen before with a bunch of white people, and that's fine. I get it. There's no problem with that. There's lots of things. So it's good. I'm glad to see that kind of representation and difference in movie making, because mm-hmm. Diversity has not been a traditional hallmark of movies. So it's nice for me to get exposed to kind of a different, I don't know, it's a different culture. It just kind of a different, it was a different style of movie making, because there was a different, it was a different formula on the same story, if you will. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Well, and also, this is not a movie that is heavy into like any particular cultural experience, you know? It's like, it's not like you're diving into the culture of these people.
We've seen this movie in other movies before.
Yeah.
The story was a little different and the characters were different, but the story itself is something that, you know, this is something that has been seen before.
Yeah.
So the story itself was not
breaking any trails there.
Right. But again, we got to see Cicely Tyson
in her last role.
We got to see Felicia Rashad
having a rough week or a good week, depending on.
I was going to say, I don't know about that. She was thrilled as can be that Mr. Quaalude got out.
Dr. Cosby is now a free man. Exonerated. Yeah. Well, sort of. Again, I don't know why we're dancing around it. Okay, so let's just dive into this movie, though, right?
Well, we're dancing around it because we're two white guys.
Yeah, I think that's it. I mean,
yeah.
It's like,
and I don't want to be that white guy that's calling out a movie that was not made for me. Yeah. It's not specifically exclusionary to me. I was not the target demo, and that's fine. I'm actually kind of glad to see that.
That's why I picked it because the other thing I was going to pick was like Flight Plan, the Jodie Foster movie. Mm-hmm. Which was made for me.
Absolutely, like the whitest movie ever.
Well, yeah, and you know, the other thing, again, The Tomorrow War, which is also sort of made for me. And this is like, hey, this will be fun to explore. Which, by the way, this does not turn me off of Tyler Perry movies. I mean, I think,
right.
Again, it was all shot pretty well.
I'm totally interested to see something that he has put a lot of time and effort
exactly.
into.
Exactly, I want to see his masterpiece.
I think that his dramatic take on things. I like his eye and I like where he goes with things. Cause I think I liked the imagery that I was given and where I was driven to in the beginning of this movie. It's the story that fell apart that I didn't. And I don't know that that was necessarily entirely all him.
Oh no, it's all him.
I mean, what I'm saying is again, like, it fell apart.
Directed, produced it. It's all him.
But I think that had he had more time to work with it, I don't think that would have been the case. But I don't know. Maybe I'm giving him too much credit. I don't know.
It's his studio. He could have taken as much time as he wanted to. Like, I don't know.
Well.
Yeah. And again, I don't know what the budget for this movie is. So I assume 5 days of shooting was pretty cheap, right?
Well, if he owns the production, I mean, I would imagine it would have been cheap. But, you know, you said this was a Netflix thing?
Exclusive? Yeah, I think it was his first, and it could have been put out in the theaters as well, but it was his first one under the Netflix deal he has. Kind of like Adam Sandler has a Netflix deal where he can put out a bunch of stuff. Shall we dive in? Or are you looking up the Netflix thing?
That's so stupid.
Are you frustrated with IMDb's new format?
Is that what I'm having a problem with?
Yeah, it makes it hard to look at stuff.
Well, I'm all right, so inside baseball, pull the curtain back. So I'm in my old bedroom in my childhood home, recording on a laptop with my microphone sitting on what was my parents' dresser. Normally I'm at my desk with two monitors, an actual keyboard and an actual mouse. And I'm trying to maneuver my laptop screen with my touchpad that's built into my MacBook.
Oh, the worst.
And nothing is activating as I would have expected. And so rather than being able to scroll left and right like I should be able to in the same manner in which I'm scrolling up and down, I actually had to go back on the browser and go back forward into it because it would not show me the left half of the screen.
Nice.
So Thank you, IMDb. So I'm trying to find details on this movie. Oh, yeah, I really don't like this layout.
Yeah. When you start clicking around, you get the old format. But it's, I don't know. Somebody thought it was a good idea.
Why do people have to fuck with things that work? I think that's old guy talking.
I think now we are the middle-aged old guys that... Yeah.
Yeah, I can't find any of the budget information.
Yeah, maybe one of the things where, because it's a Tyler Perry thing, and because it's a maybe straight to Netflix thing, we don't get access to any information.
We'll see if Wikipedia has any.
Ah, okay, yeah. I got the plot synopsis from Wikipedia because there was only a quick summary on IMDb.
Yeah, there is nothing.
Okay. Well, let's just dive in, shall we?
All right.
Okay. So, Jasmine Bryant, played by Bresha Webb, is a public defender who constantly takes plea deals in a small town in Virginia. Her husband, Jordan, played by Matthew Law from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., is a police officer who is feeling down after one of his recent victims jumps off of the roof to her death. Jasmine is given a new case by her boss, Rory, played by Tyler Perry from Vice and Alex Cross, to defend Grace Waters, Crystal Fox, from the Heat of the Night TV show and Driving Miss Daisy. Grace Waters is the woman accused of murdering her husband, Shannon DeLong, played by Macaud Brooks, from Desperate Housewives, True Blood, Supergirl, and Mortal Kombat 2021. This is a high-profile case. Grace Waters is a wealthy woman that killed her husband, and she insists on pleading guilty. This is happy as far as Rory, the DA, is, or the public defender, is concerned, because they just want to have this go away. They don't want to spend any money on this case. They want it to be in the news as little as possible. And so they give it to Jasmine, because Jasmine is not a good lawyer. All she does is make plea deals. Now, at first I thought maybe this is going to be a thing where Rory, Tyler Perry character, is just like the biggest dick boss ever, who, you know, is abusive and constantly dogs on her. And this is going to be sort of a hero's journey where she is going to struggle against adversity and then come out triumphant, sort of like a Few Good Men kind of thing. This is not the case.
No, he's an asshole.
Wait, he's an asshole for sure, but she is also not good at her job.
No.
Basically, all Grace wants is to plead guilty, and she'll agree to plead guilty if she goes to a prison close to her son, so she can visit her son, Malcolm, played by Walter Fauntleroy from The Mist. At first, Jasmine is like, okay, cool. You know, this is about my speed. I'm fine by it. But she's troubled by the details of her case, including the fact that Shannon's body was never found. Now, Rory is not pleased that Jasmine wants to try the case because the department does not have the budget for a trial, in addition to the media frenzy. So, Jasmine's colleagues, Tilsa, played by Angela Marie Rigsby, and Donnie, played by Donovan Christie Jr., they're the ones that kind of tell Jasmine that, yeah, this is sort of like flimsy circumstantial evidence. Like, why aren't you fighting this? And Jasmine is like, she doesn't want to fight it. She wants to plea. I'm like, well, this is the problem with the system. You know, you should be fighting this for justice. So she is now inspired by this, and it basically gets Grace to tell her story, although only after she visits Grace's best friend, Sarah Miller, played by Felicia Rashad, who we know from Creed, Creed 2, the upcoming Creed 3, and two versions of The Cosby Show. Sarah Miller tells Jasmine that Grace was feeling sad after her divorce, and she pushed her to get out and meet someone new, which led her to Shannon. Now, so Grace starts to, I'm going to get names mixed up here. Jasmine, the attorney, the young female attorney, believes that Grace, the older female defendant, is innocent. So she gets Grace to, by the way, Grace is very disheveled in the jail. She, not looking her best, let's say. Again, I've never been in jail. Maybe it's hard to look your best.
Well, to me, it looked like she had been in jail. That's, yeah. I mean. that my concept of what somebody who had been in jail and didn't really care about anything would look like.
Yeah, she's kind of flat
affect. She looked like she was resigned to her fate.
Yes, yes. But then Grace tells Jasmine the story. And the story is, so we flash back to when Grace meets Shannon at an art gallery. And it's all very, first of all, Shannon is super like suave and glib and whatnot. He's supposed to be a successful photographer, blah, blah, blah. She is giddy and charmed by him. She was a little bit bitter about her divorce and the fact that this is a very attractive younger man who's paying attention to her. She's guarded at first, but then with a little bit of extra encouragement from her best friend, Sarah, decides to sort of take the plunge and start dating him. Although, she makes him wait. She's a lady. And then after this sort of whirlwind kind of courtship, she agrees to marry him. And in, I don't know, I mean, this was probably a good 20 minutes of this whole story. It was very charming. I really liked the performance of Crystal Fox, the Grace character, does a great job. Sort of falling in love, younger man. The guy who plays Shannon, Macaud Brooks, is, again, super, like, a little bit smarmy. But, you know, like, reasonably good at this thing. But as soon as they get married, then, screech!
He came across as one of those typical, very, trying to find the right phrase. He seemed to me to be one of those self-congratulatory millennials.
Yeah, a little bit.
That's kind of how he came off across to me. Like, he just kind of knows his thing. He does his thing. He's happy with who he is. And yeah, it's like those people that call themselves foodies.
He's a little too cool for school, for sure.
Yeah. Do you know exactly what I'm saying, though?
Yeah. I mean, oh, yeah. Yeah.
He thinks he's hot shit. And he wants everybody else to think he's hot shit. And if you don't think he's hot shit, then you don't know it. You don't know anything.
Yeah. And without saying so much, he assumes that she is flattered that he is paying attention to her. Is flattered. Well,
like, oh yeah, yeah.
Like, no, he knows obviously. that she feels flattered that he's paying attention.
Oh, she is smitten.
Of course. Yeah. But tries to keep it on the DL, but it's hard. Anyway, so they get married and then again, screech. There's no subtlety in the transformation that takes place.
Yeah, there's no segue.
No. Well, it's, yeah, the segue, it goes right from like a very, like, again, tender sort of courtship, even though you don't trust the guy or whatever, but it's all tender from her point of view, and into a screeching thing where not only has Shannon like married her under false pretenses, and stole the passwords to her accounts at home and work and has been stealing money from her, got a mortgage on her house that was paid off, and is like bringing women home and also smoking indoors. So it's, I mean, on one hand, it's such a tonal shift. And you understand why he goes from being like manipulative bastard to suddenly being under the influence of a baseball bat. But
by the way, that is like such fantasy wish fulfillment.
Also, that was normally the foamiest baseball bat I've ever seen. I saw it bend when she hit it.
I didn't even notice that, but it's funny because normally I shouldn't say normally. I don't expect that kind of revenge scene in a movie, but it's satisfying to see it.
Oh yeah,
it was very satisfying to see. It was remarkable. It was one of the real high points at that point in that general vicinity of the movie. I was actually kind of really. I don't want to say I was happy that she killed him, but.
It's kind of an empowering moment.
It was kind of I was kind of smug about it. I was like, well, good for you.
Well, because he was being basically like she's like, out of my house. He was like, have you checked the laws? It's my house too, bitch. Ashtray. Well,
I mean, he pushed her. I mean, I totally would empathize with her.
Oh, of course. This is like, it's manipulating you for sure.
Yeah. No, it was effective. That was very effective.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because if I had had the opportunity, I would have hit him with a bat, too.
Of course. Yeah. Especially after, because this is after not only has he stolen her money and admitted to it, but he brought a woman home, a woman who kept referring to her as his mom and sort of mocking her to her face. So she just had enough. And so she grabbed a baseball bat and she was standing behind him. And so she just gave him a fairly graphic beating.
Well, she was standing behind him as he was telling her how dumb she was how easily he was able to manipulate her because the type of woman she is ripe because she's low hanging fruit.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. No, he's done this before and he will do this again. And he doesn't even feel sorry for her because she's just so dumb.
Well, and he that whole speech about you should be paying me.
Oh, yeah.
For the attention I gave you.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, oh, man.
Oh, no. This is all like manipulation.
Sinister bullshit. Yes.
I mean, no, I'm not saying this is not skillfully done in this sense. So she beats him, like I said, in a fairly graphic manner. Presumably to death. Okay. That's a spoiler. Because she is on trial for murder. That could be capital murder. Which Adrian Pasdar is not going to plead down to anything less than, like, what, life? Like, I'll plead down to life. Like, well, that's the best you could do? Better than death. Well, that doesn't seem... whatever. By the way, did you think she was trying to protect her son?
I didn't.
Okay.
I figured that was complete misdirection.
It was certainly misdirection.
Because we never really saw her son at all.
Yeah, he was barely in the movie.
Yeah. So,
A lot of these characters were like just outlines.
Red herring.
Well, and they were very lightly drawn. There was no... you didn't feel for anybody except maybe for Grace. And you certainly felt hatred for Shannon. And you don't trust Felicia Rashad because of her relationship with Dr. Cosby.
The funny thing is I didn't trust her from the beginning of the movie. Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause she's got, see, it's funny cause she's doing her smarmy charm thing.
Yeah. The whole boarding house thing, like where they made it all suspicious. Cause there's, the weird people hanging and lurking in the background. Like instantly that was way too telegraphed. See, there was no nuance in that. It was so unsubtle that I instantly jumped to the end.
Well, except that it's funny because it was subtle enough that I didn't quite understand what was going on. I certainly did not find out, expect to see later
when she's the human trafficking.
Literally like a dozen or more people chained to pipes, barely dressed in the basement.
Yeah. What I was expecting. I was expecting this whole turn in the movie. And this is where I went with it in my cognitive ability when I was getting drunk on the plane. So I expected in the beginning as she was telling her cop husband,
yes,
were they husband. Married?
Yeah.
All right. Her cop husband, cause he was trying to tell her about the suicide he had,
I think he was intentionally not telling her about it.
Well, they had this whole conversation about how they wouldn't talk about it and they would. And I was waiting for that exchange to happen so that he could come in and be kind of part hero and be like, hey, wait a minute.
Exactly.
Which I think may have been a better choice. But again, I'm not the movie maker, so what the hell do I know?
Did the thing with the lady jumping off the building, was that presumably... Sarah's house, like the boarding house thing?
I think so.
Okay, I thought so too, which means like at some point he should have put her together. He's a cop, right?
Yeah.
He would have known about this case, whether he knew the intimate details of it.
Yeah. Maybe. I mean, again, because he hemmed and hawed when she asked him to look stuff up, which I understand would be a breach of many things.
So. Oh, yeah. It turns out he's not great at his job either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had expected that to be one of the turns. I guess I was surprised in that respect, but I was also disappointed.
Well, so that's the thing. So suddenly, you know, now we see the fact that she killed this guy, presumably. And so, of course, this trial is going on, and they've decided Jasmine has pretty much convinced Grace to fight it, even though Rory is like, no, you are like, why haven't you given the paperwork to the DA yet about with the plea agreement? She's like, if you get this blood spatter expert, it's like, we're not getting any blood spatter expert. We don't have any money. Do the job I gave you to do. And where's my coffee, woman? He's not a good boss.
He's not a good person. Yeah, beyond no, boss. He's not. Yeah. He's barely human.
Yeah, he doesn't have any redeeming qualities, as it turns out, either.
Well, that much is certain.
So, at the trial, Jasmine does a horrible job. Like really bad.
She's not good.
No, she's not good, and there's no redeeming moment for her either. Like, she screws this case up from stem to stern, and then, of course, she calls Sarah as a witness, because that, even though Grace didn't want her called, I think, to draw her into the drama or whatever. But it's like, yeah, so Sarah becomes the worst witness ever, basically lying on the stand briefly, and Grace is found guilty. So now, feeling defeated, Jasmine stops by Sarah's residence, a residence for old ladies, to basically console Grace's best friend that Grace is going to go to jail for life or whatever. And that's where she notices Alice, Cicely Tyson, who we know from Sounder and the autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman, trying to escape from the house. Now, this actually turns out Jasmine may be a good person because she's trying to get Miss Alice back into the house in a very kind way. And then she realizes that, oh, this is bad.
The path to hell being paved with good intentions.
Of course, yeah. So Alice manages to reveal that other people have died there. Jasmine goes peeking around and discovers that there are women chained up in the basement. So she calls her husband. Not 911, right? Right. Or did she go? Yeah, I think she called him directly, right?
No, I think she called 911 because he got it over his cop car.
Oh, remember? There we go. Okay, yeah. There we go. All right. So,
because like his cop buddy was like, you need to check your computer.
Oh, yes. There you go. No, you're right. By the way, here's again, I don't want to, you know, Monday morning quarterback, even fake police officers, except that he had this guy handcuffed and like basically like bent over the
over front the of his car. Yeah.
And then went to look at his computer, just leaving him there, right? There's nothing to prevent the guy from standing up and running away, even though he was handcuffed. And then he drives away, leaving the guy still cuffed. Like, this guy is standing outside the 7-Eleven, still with his hands cuffed behind his back. Yeah, it's fine, it's my lucky day, bank error in my favor, but uncuff me first, dude. Yeah, so that's a problem. Later, he also handcuffs somebody and just leaves them bent over a table.
Where did he get the handcuffs? Because he already left them on the other guy.
I was thinking about that too, but you know, you often have more than one set of cuffs. Because, you know, sometimes...
do you?
Yeah, because you leave them on the prisoner and stuff. So, yeah, having a couple pairs is not unusual.
Good to know.
Yeah. That was my first thing to do. He's pretty free with his cuffs. He's giving them away all over town. So this is where we discover that this is the house that the lady jumped at because that everything had been taken from her. That's why she was so despondent, is because she had nothing left to live for.
What Alice was her name? The Cicely Tyson?
Yes.
Because she said her address, which was the slum house that...
Yes, that...
That Jasmine was directed to...
Hold on. What was that all
based
about?
It was the same address as Grace found that was Shannon's, used by one of Shannon's something. And so the address correlated.
Yeah, it was some sort. Yeah, I forget. He had listed that address yeah. in some piece of paper, whatever. So now we have this thing where it's like a little bit of Silence of the Lambs. And
I think that's where the mortgage paperwork was sent to or something.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah, because actually, turns out she did a little investigation, because not only did he, and I got confused briefly, because he embezzled a bunch of money, like $300-something thousand
from her account.
Job as a bank. You know, like she works like in a mortgage department. But yep. he also took out a $300-something thousand loan on her house that was paid for.
Yeah.
From a different bank or the same bank or something. So there was two sets of $300+ thousand things that were a problem. By the way, the bank manager, whatever, the CEO of the bank, whatever. Yeah, he should have called the cops right there at that board meeting. It's like, yeah, you stole $300,000 from us. Yeah. Like
that's grand larceny at that point.
Oh, yeah. It's bad. Yeah. In fact, you're staying here until the cops come and arrest you.
And actually, I believe if it's a bank, by law, it becomes a federal crime.
Yeah. I don't know whether it's. Yeah. Yeah. It's if you rob a bank, it's a federal crime.
Yeah. So.
Yep. So, yeah. So the FBI could come and arrest her. But it's not that kind of town. He just says, like, get out of my sight. Which is just to take her stapler home or whatever from her desk. I guess it's not
the same. Yeah, seems a little far-fetched.
It's a little loosey-goosey with that kind of procedure. Yeah, a little bit. But it's a small town. What do you do? Anyway, so we have this Silence of the Lambs thing where she's at James Gunn's house in the dark, whatever. So he goes after, her cop husband goes after. And eventually, we find out that Shannon is still alive. And it's revealed that he is Sarah's son, and they've been just grifting all these people all the time. Okay. Now, here's the thing. During the trial, during the closing arguments of the trial, you know, they had mentioned that Grace is presumed to have killed him because of the blood evidence they found inside the house, but then taken him to a swamp and dumped him in there. It's like, where did that part of it come from? Because they never found a body. Did Grace say she dumped him in the swamp?
Didn't Sarah say that Grace called her from somewhere?
Maybe, but I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
It seemed like that whole thing there was like not great. But
strange and uncorroborated.
Yeah, it's super circumstantial and weird. Yeah, anyway. So blah blah blah. Jordan, Sarah tells Jordan the cop, like, oh, you can come in my house if you have a warrant, but if you don't, you need to leave now. Goodbye. And so Jordan calls his wife's phone, and he hears the phone ring in the kitchen right outside the front door, or right inside the front door. And so he then kicks the door in and handcuffs Sarah, leaves her bent over the table, because again, that's his move, and is looking for Jasmine. So Jordan ends up being surprised by Shannon, who is trying to fight with Jordan. Shannon, by the way, has a gauzed up head because he has indeed been the victim of a bat attack. Then Shannon is shot by Jasmine and presumably killed. As the police rescue the elderly women, it's just revealed that Sarah and Shannon are really mother and son criminals, Betty and Maurice Mills, who've been kidnapping elderly women for the Social Security information and conning middle-aged women out of their life savings for over 25 years, with Grace being one of those middle-aged women. So then, right, so that's an interesting ending. It's, again, very dramatic. Like, it starts out like melodramatic relationship movie and turns into crazy over-dramatic, like, thriller movie. Mm-hmm. And then Grace gets another hearing, and this time she presents new evidence that Grace was victimized by Betty and Maurice's scheme, and that they're also wanted in several states for stealing from numerous women, blah, blah, blah. So the judge grants Grace her freedom. Okay? Now, here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all well and good. Grace still committed, like, felony assault on this guy. I mean, best case scenario. Like, again, he stole a bunch of money from her, which is horrible. But you are not allowed in America, usually,
to wanton assault someone.
Yeah, to assault someone with a deadly weapon, especially when they have their back turned. It says there's no element of self-defense in Grace's actions at all. She was attempted to murder this guy faux show. And even though she may have a reason to be angry with him, doesn't give him the right to kill him with a baseball bat.
Yeah, use him as a T-ball T. Yeah.
As satisfying as that was, for sure.
It was. So, but here's one of the things that I started to pick apart, though, too. What was his exit strategy? Eventually, he's going to get caught for being a grifter.
Yeah, and how old is he that they've been doing this for 25 years?
Well, there was that. But also, Sarah's house was a slum. If they had been amassing money with all those women's social security all this time,
No, it wasn't a slum. It was just a row house.
It wasn't a great house in a great area. And so, wouldn't you, through some attrition of death, move to someplace a little nicer where you could secure your captives a little better? I mean, if you were going to have this criminal mastermind operation, wouldn't you want it a little better insulated? I mean, granted, I'm picking the movie apart, but there's so many things where if this was your gravy train, would you really have it so lackadaisically protected?
Also,
where people could break out and wander down the street?
Yeah, and what was their exit strategy? Was it their plan at some point just to abandon this whole house full of women and move on?
Yeah, so there's a lot of things that by the time I got to the end of the movie, I'm like, wait a minute. This doesn't, you're meant to be distracted by this shiny, we feel good, you're dismissed, and you're exonerated kind of thing. But then I was like, wait a minute.
Well, and
how
did
we get here?
Also, so Jordan, Jasmine's husband, the cop, she, at the beginning of the movie, she wanted to quit. She don't want to be a lawyer anymore. He's like, no, but babe. You put all this work into it and you're good at it. This is your life's dream. Like, you're good at this thing. By the way, she is not.
No, she's not.
Yeah. And even at the end, she is not. And Rory has every reason to fire her.
Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't have any hero turns either. He didn't say, you did a good kid. It's more you lucked out. What a weird situation. So I'm just kind of, again, you do have the possibility of the future movie because Betty, who we knew as Sarah before, but we can all say after this week's Cosby News, bye, Felicia. She's now on the run, but she's also hired to take care of an elderly woman at a nursing home or some sort of facility. Or maybe just a rich person's house, maybe. I don't know. Anyway. Oh, yeah, it was. She made a big deal. It laid it on real thick about how. Now, what did she used to do? She managed a bank? Is that how she got a bunch of money? Huh, how interesting.
There's a bunch of pairs of scissors falling down.
Exactly, yeah. So, here's the problem I have with it. As a melodrama, I guess it's fine. As a thriller, it's not super satisfying. There's lots of plot holes. I think the acting, there's such tonal shifts that I'm going to blame it as a directorial problem, because when they're acting subtly, they're fine. It's just when they go from like zero to crazy, it's like,
I can understand that.
Yeah. I mean, is that strictly for time? If it were a TV show that had to be wrapped up in 30 minutes, I'd be
wondering. Again, it makes me wonder if he just didn't have enough media to re-edit or edit together. There's some things that were just not working.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe is that where Adrian Pasdar came in? Like he came in for a half a day.
It seems to me like parts of this movie didn't exist that should have. It seemed to me like things didn't quite seem together correctly. Because part of the problem is that it kept jumping back and forth in time. I think to establish things that were happening, but the other problem with that is that I think they were trying to also allow space to be able to shoehorn stuff in as needed. And maybe. I think there, even though the movie was 2 hours long, I think there was more stuff that should have been in there.
Well, and okay, here's another thing. Like if we're really going to pick apart and throw stones in Richard Perry's direction, I think Crystal Fox did a great job as being Grace Waters. A good casting choice. I don't think McCad Brooks, if that's how you pronounce his name, I mean, he is basically like the most beautiful man in the planet. So
yeah,
if he was less attractive and slightly older, I think it would be like a little more believable. Because, you know, from the very beginning, and again, I don't want to use stereotypes, but this is one of those things where
I think
if I was wanting to yell at the screen during a movie, this is sort of like, don't trust him.
I think that part of the beginning of this movie is setting up the fact that you're supposed to believe that he's genuine. And so he can only be genuine. I believe the implication is he can only be genuine because he is so pretty and perfect and. Yeah,
okay.
He's got it all together now, but he's from a sullen dystopian past, but he's come past that now. He's very realistic.
Yes, he's been to Africa, so he knows some shit. And he's an artist. He's very sensitive, and he's got like a 12-pack of abs. Which again, I don't hate him because he's beautiful. I just think it would have been a little bit better if he was just slightly older and dumpier. But maybe not.
I have a 6-pack. It's just protected by some airbags. So So there's a couple touches in this movie that were interesting. The Catholicism bent was interesting.
Yeah, it was weird.
There's a deep religious bend in this that was a little. It was so.
It was kind of like anti-Catholic, right?
Almost.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was
because it was definitely a Baptist church that they went to.
It was out of place.
Because Grace is not a Catholic.
The volume to which they cranked it up to 11 was, I think, it was way overdone. There was so little subtlety that it was ridiculous. It was nearly farcical.
I think that is a hallmark of Tyler Perry Mr. movies Perry. Too, is that his characters, some of the characters he uses are very, very bad men. And then the women who get revenge on those very bad men. And then courtroom scenes.
Because it almost seems like it's a mockery of religion.
Well, there's that. I mean, he's like heavily, again, that's part of his core audience is religious folk. But, specifically Baptist, you know, sort of Southern Baptist kind of.
At the beginning of this movie, I wrote when Jasmine and was it Aaron?
Jordan's the husband.
Who's her husband's name?
Her husband's name is Jordan.
Jasmine and Jordan?
Yeah.
Really? Anyway, at the beginning of the movie, they have that little chat where she says to him when he's clearly having some trouble dealing with things, but doesn't want to talk about it. She says, well, you'll tell me later. Like you always do. You know, you don't need to tell me right now. You can tell. I was thinking this is relationship goals. Like sign me up for this.
Yeah.
This isn't real life.
But again, this is a melodrama. This isn't supposed to be like a slice of life
document. Yeah, I know. But then when Shannon and Grace are at the diner and he's sitting there with his, sitting like all poncy back with his hands crossed.
Yeah, what is that all about?
I don't even know. I thought, I wrote down specifically, do people really sit all poncy like that at a diner?
And were they like freaking nursing their salads for 3 hours or something? Because they were eating salad. That's all I could tell.
And glasses of wine.
Yes, salad and wine, of course. It's a salad wine.
Because, you know, diners sell lots of wine, I'm sure.
Again, this town in Virginia has some interesting liquor laws. Because it was like 2 a.m. or something?
I think that was them. Yeah, I think that's what they said.
Yeah.
We were out till 2 a.m. and I had to be up at work. And now my starving
I'm falling asleep at work because I'm so,
yeah.
You know. And yet, again, he walks her home, but she's like, oh, no, you're not coming inside. So she certainly maintains her integrity, her. It's not really chastity necessarily. Is that is chastity a one and done deal, or is chastity like an ongoing thing? I don't know. She's not a loose woman at all. She insists that he waits, which he does because he's a very patient and respectful man. who's been conning women since apparently he was in the third grade. or final thoughts? Do you have any notes? Anything?
No, that was all my notes. Okay. Do people really sit like that at the diner was my final note. I stopped taking notes at that point because the movie was frustrating me a little bit. Because I think at that point that was an hour in, maybe.
Yeah.
Anyway,
that was before the turn with the bat.
I think this movie's probably a C plus, B minus, but I don't know. I think it's maybe a C movie. It would be a stretch to go much more than a C. I didn't hate it. It wasn't awful. It was entertaining, but it was kind of flavorless, and it's ultimately it will be forgettable.
Let's see. I am putting on the calendar Madea's Big Happy Family.
Okay.
As it'll be a month from now or whenever. All right. That is considered to be the best Madea cinematic universe. What do I call it? Madea's Family, whatever.
All right. Well,
Big Happy Family.
We have a different series to look at then.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, part of the reason I was so excited is because, are you familiar with the podcast Newcomers? It's comedian Nicole Byer and comedian improviser Lauren Lapkus, who have a podcast about the first season they did was neither of them have seen any of the Star Wars movies. So they watched all of the Star Wars movies and had a guest on every time, I think every time, to talk about like their reactions and stuff. And then the second season they did was all the Lord of the Rings movies. And then they went to the Tyler Perry movies. And of course, they're not doing all Tyler Perry movies because there's a shit ton of them. But they pick like 10 or 12 or something. This was not on that list. So,
no.
Yeah. But okay. But it's very interesting because there's, you know, the couple of this movie. I haven't watched this movie now. I listened to more of those episodes because there's definitely a theme that kind of runs through them all. Again, these very, very bad men and these women who are pushed to the edge, and then the courtroom drama, and then, you know, family relationship stuff, which is why I'm eager to see the Madea movie, because apparently Madea's character is like super compelling. So pretty much every movie they've seen that has Madea in it, they're like, oh, yeah, we always want to see more Madea. And yet the movies are not necessarily lightweight just because there's one like fairly comic
moment of levity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll see how this how that runs down. I think the next one All three of us had put down was Doctor Strange, the next in the other MCU.
Yeah. Movies which I've seen already.
Drew, right? Has Drew picked a movie from your list?
No.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, I will see you tomorrow. We're going to leave housekeeping for when we have more time to maybe talk all three of us about housekeeping.
I have a little separate housekeeping.
Oh, do you? Okay, sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Housekeeping.
Because last week I was going to attempt to join you for Rogue One.
Oh, yeah. Tell me your thoughts on Rogue One.
That was the other movie I watched on the plane. Ha ha. Okay. It's all full circle now.
Ah, okay.
Sorry. That was another movie I watched on a plane. Not the same plane.
Yes. On the plane back down.
Different.
Yeah, because it turns out, by the way, Jason had a quick turnaround. He just left after the anniversary party and then came back mere days later for the traumatic medical emergency.
I arrived in Portland Thursday at noon. I worked Friday. And then I bought a plane ticket Saturday night and I left Portland at 5:30, 6 o'clock Monday morning.
Yeah.
By the way, when I was driving to the airport at 4:30 in the morning, I think it was 93 degrees.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was not sorry to be leaving the blast furnace of
Sandy. How is Jesse coping with?
I have central air.
Nice.
So he's enjoying that very much. Yeah. He's appreciating that.
Glad you made the investment. Yeah.
Well, I'm not enjoying the investment myself, but I'm glad that he's able to avail himself to the services.
Yeah.
But I watched Rogue One, so I did watch it, and I had intended to join you last week, but through a confluence of just many things that pissed me off, I was not able to. I don't know if you discussed, because obviously there's no podcast yet. You haven't finished editing.
No, it's actually, as at time of recording, it's already been edited, has not been released. It'll be released tomorrow, okay, about 4 p.m. Because
I think I posed the question, like, how is there no friendly fire?
Yes, yeah. Well, we discussed a little bit that the rules of getting hit by lasers and blasters and stuff in the Star Wars universe have always been kind of...
lackadaisical.
Well, plot-driven.
Yeah. So, overall, I mean... I thought it was an okay movie. It was decent.
Did it whet your appetite for other modern Star Wars movies?
It did not change my opinion.
No.
It neither made me more or less interested in the future movies.
How do you think? Because, okay, so I enjoyed it quite a bit.
But I will say, very quickly in the beginning of this movie, I know exactly where this movie was going to end.
Sure.
This movie is in no way subtle.
No, not at all. But what did you think about the ending?
It depends on which aspect.
Okay.
Are you talking about the fact that the main lead characters were blown up and murdered, or the fact that they came full circle with Kurt?
I love a movie where everybody dies at the end.
or where they pull the Carrie Fisher gimmick.
Well, yes, it is a gimmick for sure. With the face replacing technology or whatever. We talk about that too. I like the fact that it's a movie where everybody dies, and yet you actually end the movie with like kind of like a yay, because I think Rogue One, and I talked about this in the podcast, but I think it made Star Wars A New Hope 1977 a better movie.
Well, it certainly gives you the history and the context.
Yeah, and it you know, Drew argued that there was no plot hole that needed to be filled. And I was like, yeah, except that, like, again, that one thing about, like, why is there, like, a fatal flaw in the Death Star?
Yes.
I thought that was nice that they filled it, and that you got to see, like, because Rogue One ends, like, what, 15 minutes before A New Hope starts.
Right.
Or maximum a couple days. I mean, yeah. I don't know. I thought it was super skillfully done. As I talked about in the podcast, I thought that some of the characters, like Alan Tudyk's droid and the blind samurai guy and his best buddy, all of that could have been too much, but it wasn't. It was perfect. It was a kid-friendly action movie that I enjoyed quite a bit. Anyway.
No, I thought it was fine. It was a fine movie. It was entertaining. I liked it. It gave history and context. I knew I was not in suspense through this movie. I knew exactly where it was going, but I was fine with that. It was a beautiful movie.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We talked about that too, that the, you know, making it look like the 1977, like computer screens and stuff, was a good choice. And the fact that they found some footage and they reused some footage from the 77 film and just kind of superimposed faces and backgrounds on it made it much more seamless. Like, this movie could run right into the other movie, and I would be perfectly fine with it. Although I did have one problem. I don't know if you had the same problem, but my Darth Vader doesn't crack wise. Like when he force choked that guy and then said, "Don't choke on your aspirations," or whatever. It's like, no. My Darth Vader doesn't make a quip.
Oh, I was fine with that.
Yeah, okay. It's like, yeah, he doesn't drop his mic and like drop the lightsaber. Bitch, I'm out of here.
Well,
Well, you get to hear the whole episode tomorrow. You can listen to on the way home from Willow.
We're on the way there.
It comes up at 4:00. It's available.
Nah, we'll see. We'll see if I'm able to download it. So,
from Drew's house, it's fine. It's not a rusty cabin. So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here. Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, so they go off on a tangent flow and maybe rambling. That's the Brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away unless you're driving. Keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in a Creepy Way.